This is from Acts 20. Seated in a window was a young man named Eutychus, who was sinking into a deep sleep as Paul talked on and on. When he was sound asleep, he fell to the ground from the third story of the building that he was in. Paul's preaching, he's sleeping, he falls out the window, hits the ground, and was picked up dead. Russ? Paul went down, threw himself on the young man, and put his arms around him. He says, "Don't be alarmed." He said, "He's alive." And then the final slide. Then he, Paul, went upstairs again and broke bread and ate. After talking until daylight, he left. So, we're not going to use this slide. I'm not talking till the morning. We're going to go something totally different, you know. But, I mean, Steve mentioned this yesterday, and I says, well, I thought that's good. So now you'll feel better since you're not going to be staying till tomorrow. You're going to be out of here probably in a couple of hours. So we appreciate that. How many of you, you've been to Haiti, I know. Been to Haiti, a few of you. I remember going to Haiti, and I don't know if it was with Mercy Ships or Paul, but anyways, we were in Haiti, and they said, oh, we have a Tuesday night worship service. I'm like, oh, I'd like to go to that, you know. I go, what time does it start? They said, 6 o'clock. I'm like, great. And of course, because I'm how I am, I'm like, and what time is it over, you know? Oh, you know, midnight, 1 o'clock. And I'm like, really? So, yeah, in different parts of the world, they do their worship a lot differently. So, no, that's not the... That's not what we're going to be talking about today. Who likes tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwiches? Oh, look, cool. I think there was one on Shark Tank, wasn't there? Like a thing about tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwiches? This is like a word from God because I've been thinking this tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwiches. And yesterday we're talking and then all of a sudden they start making lunch. And I'm like, whoa, it's tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwiches. So this is an anointed message because... it's all about tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwich. No, it's not. It's about encouragement. Does anybody need some discouragement today? Anybody need to be discouraged? You had such a great week and you're feeling so good. You want me to like slam you and nobody? Little discouragement? Come on, you want some? No, we're all looking for encouragement. So some of you who know me, like my sons here and... these are our friends Joe and Jessica Data. They were on Mercy Ships with us. They stayed 2 years, and we're glad they're here with us. But anyways, I like to tell stories, you know. And I figure, well, Jesus told a lot of stories, so I'm in good company. So I'm going to start with the first story, and we'll see if you can do the math. I believe it was 1961 or 1962. I was a young lad. I'm 63 years old, so you can stop figuring that in your head. 63 years old. I was like 7 years old, maybe 8. I just remember this so distinctly in my head. Used to come home. Went to Chicago Public Schools. Got out at 3:15. Walked home 3:30. Be home. I think Leave It to Beaver was on. I'm not sure. On the black and white television, you know, watching Leave It to Beaver. And my mother wasn't home, but my father was home. He used to start very early, and he'd get home from work pretty early in the day. And I just remember I'm watching Leave It to Beaver and the doorbell rings. And I'm like, you know, go up and answer the door. And there was you would call him a homeless person. Back then, he was a bum. I mean, he was a hobo, you know. He wasn't carrying a stick with a, you know, little knapsack thing or whatever they called that on his back. But he was a bum, you know. That's what we called him back then. And I was like, oh, hello. And then my father just, he came up behind me and it's like, I mean, this guy was dirty and smelled and his clothes, you know, he was a bum. It's, you know, kind of like Skid Row, if you remember that, West Madison Street in Chicago. And I don't know what he was doing at our house and how he got there. But so he rang the bell and my father and I were there and my father invites him into the house. And I'm like, well, okay, fine, you know, it's my father. I'm not going to argue with him. And I go back to watching Leave It to Beaver or whatever the show was. And I guess the guy was hungry. So my father made him grilled cheese sandwiches and tomato soup, which was pretty unusual, you know. It's like 3:30, 3:45 in the afternoon, and my father's cooking in the kitchen and making this stuff. And I just remember this. I'm telling you, I'm like 7 years old. I remember it was like yesterday. And then, I mean, the guy sat at our kitchen table and you know, I don't know if they talked about anything or whatever. He ate the soup. He ate the sandwich or two. Then my father, I don't know, he gave him like cheese and crackers, whatever. He gave him some stuff to go, you know. And then as he was walking out the door, I know, and I think it was probably like a dollar or two. You know, granted, this is like 1961 or something. A dollar or two was kind of a lot of money. And my father's giving him this money. And I'm like, okay. And I never forget, this guy says to my father, he says, well, thank you so much for helping me. I will repay you. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know, I'm like, this guy's going to come back and give us $1 million in a week or something. No. And my father said to him, he says, don't repay me. He says, use it to encourage somebody else. When you get, you know, when you get on your feet, use it to encourage somebody else. And I was like, wow, that's pretty good. Encourage, you know, what we would call now paying it forward is what he was doing. But I mean, I didn't know Jesus. I, you know, this was, I'm 7 years old growing up in the north side of Chicago, you know, a little Jewish kid. And it's like, but I just remember that. And I was like, wow, that's pretty encouraging. You ever hear that saying, sticks and stones will break your bones and words will never hurt you? All of you have heard that. I disagree with that. I used to play baseball. I broke a lot of my fingers. I broke an arm. I think I broke my leg once. And you know what? They all healed. I don't remember, you know, the specifics of how they got broken. But I do remember words, you know. Like, you know, you're stupid, maybe. Maybe your parents told you that. Maybe your teacher told you that. You'll never be anything. Think how discouraging those words are. Or, oh, you're smart. You'll be able to do this. You're doing a great job. I appreciate that. Two totally different things. Matthew, he doesn't, that's our youngest son. He doesn't know I'm going to talk about him for just a minute. But he ran the Chicago Marathon in October. And we went down after church. You know, of course we had to come to church. Because, anyways, we went down after church and we're at the finish line with thousands of other people. And everybody's cheering their runner in, you know. We saw a couple of other people that we knew who were running. And very encouraging, I think. Were you encouraged? Thank you. We'll go to another story. So some of you know, like, I don't swim that much anymore. I used to swim long distance open water, and I swam from Alcatraz years ago. And we used to do this thing called Big Shoulders in Chicago. It's the first Saturday in September. And for many years, get up at 4:30 in the morning in Elmhurst, and we would drive down to Ohio Street Beach, and we'd swim down from Ohio Street Beach all along Lakeshore Drive to Oak Street Beach and back, and that was our training. And we maybe did that two or three times a week, and I'm like, you know, I was younger, not that much younger, but I was younger, and I'm like, I'm in pretty good shape, you know, I can do this. And Big Shoulders is coming, and we're practicing, and first time I ever did an event like that, and there's like maybe 400 people that morning that are signing in, and they paint the number on your arm and stuff. And I'm like, you know, I got this. You know, I'm pretty good. And it's a 5K swim. You swim east out to a buoy, and then you swim back, and then back along Lakeshore Drive, back to Ohio Street, and you do that twice. And I'm like, okay. And so I get out in the water, and I'm swimming. And if any of you swim, like, I don't know, because I don't run. I don't really know how it is. But when you're swimming, you're alone. It, you know, you're just there by yourself. It doesn't matter. There might be some people close by, but it's like stroke, stroke. You're thinking, you're concentrating. In an open water, the biggest problem is navigation. It's like how not to get, you know, so you're like focusing on a certain point so you get where you're going. And I'm swimming, and I'm like, oh, this is pretty good, pretty good. I'm doing this, okay. And get to the first 2.5K, you know, and start heading back out, and it's like Mike's getting tired. Mike's getting really tired, and I'm swimming, and you know, there's like young people, and they're like just killing it, you know. They've already done, you know, they're coming in after their second lap, and I'm just doing my first, but again, I just wanted to do it. So I'm coming in, I'd never forget this, I'm coming along Lakeshore Drive, I've swam that many, many, many times, I'm all by myself in the water, there's people up there, and I'm like, I'm not going to make it. This is really tough, I'm having a hard time. I'm not that far away yet, maybe couple hundred yards at the most. And then all of a sudden there was a couple of people just walking down the concrete, you know, on the shore, and they just stopped and they started clapping and, you can do it, you can make it. And I was like, wow, I can do it, I can make it. And I did. I did make it, and I did do it, and I've done it, I think, twice total. But how encouraging is that when you're encouraged? And today's message is not so much about being encouraged. It's about being an encourager. Because we all want to be encouraged. Well, if we want to be encouraged, we need somebody to encourage us, you know. And sometimes we discourage each other. So I've done that once or twice. So, okay, let's pray. Lord, we come to you this day, and we just thank you for your word and what it says about many people in the Bible who are encouragers. Many of them are nameless, faceless people, people that we don't know. My prayer would be is that many people in here would become nameless, faceless people who would be encouraging others in their neighborhood, in their place of work, wherever they might be, that they would be encouragers and just people would be blessed by that. We ask all of this in your name. Amen. So, you've all heard of Barnabas in the Bible. I mean, I believe he means son of encouragement, so he's kind of our number one encourager guy. He encouraged the Apostle Paul. He also encouraged Mark. Mark had a huge failure, and Barnabas came in and encouraged him. So we all need encouragement. And it takes on many forms. And I was kind of thinking about this. Could be a kind word, a word of confidence. I think a lot of us try to encourage our kids a lot. You know, oh, you can do it, you're great. You know, sometimes I think we overdo it a little bit, to be honest with you. But we do that with our kids, but I don't think we do that with each other so much. It might be a kind word, it might be a hug, it might be a text, an email, a phone call. A lot of times I say, Susan, let's just invite them. I know they're not going to come, but I want to invite them so they'll feel part of it, you know. Sometimes they do come, and it's good. But maybe a helping hand. We have a neighbor by us, and unfortunately he sold his house and he's moving, but my name's Ron. I bring in your mail. I bring in your garbage cans. Tonight I'll put the garbage out. I'll come home tomorrow afternoon, and the can will be by the garage. We go out of town. The mail's taken care of. He's a former policeman. He watches over the house. I mean, you know, it's a good thing. He's a helping hand. Sometimes it's a listening ear. We have some people who send out greeting cards from the church for your birthday or if you're sick and things like that. This can be very encouraging, and I don't think we realize how much some little thing that we do might encourage somebody else. So going back to Haiti, my favorite place on the planet. So we, you know, a couple years ago, we had sold our house, we sold our cars, we cashed everything in, we're going to Mercy Shifts. So first we got to go to Texas for 6 weeks, and then we're going to go to Haiti for a couple weeks, and then we're coming back, and Ebola breaks out, and there's this whole mess starts going, and it's like, well, we don't have any income, you know, we're missionaries now, where's this money going to come from, how are we going to do this, because on Mercy Ships we paid, I don't recall, but it's not free, you have to pay to be on the ship to work. What a concept. They really do marketing good at that Mercy Ship thing. So you have to pay on their ship to work, and you know, you have to pay to get there, and blah blah blah, and it's like, so where's this money going to come from? And so we've been 6 weeks in training in Texas doing all kinds of stuff, and then we're in Haiti, and let me tell you, it was a little warm, you know, 120 degrees or something, and it was like brutal. And it's like, Susan's not happy, I'm not happy, it's hot, it's like we're living in this, the men are all living in this plastic building, right? I mean, it was a plastic building with bunk beds, and it was not great conditions. The women were living in similar. The electricity only came on at night for a few hours, so the air conditioner could bring it down to like 90 or something inside. It was really, really hot. So, you know, we're kind of getting kind of discouraged, you know, and it's like, and then I had my phone. I find They had Wi-Fi, but you had to like walk over to this other building to get it, to get on the Wi-Fi. And I get this email from Mercy Ships. And anytime somebody like donated money to us, to our account, I would get an email. And we hadn't, let me tell you, I hadn't gotten any emails yet. We were email free at that point. So I go and it's like some friends of ours deposited a nice sum of money in our account. And I'm thinking if they didn't have done that day, we might have been on the plane coming back. I'm not sure, you know, but it was very encouraging that they, it wasn't so much the money. It was like, wow, somebody's out there thinking about us and willing to support us. And then later on, I'll talk about the Reeds because they're missionaries and they're young. They got young kids. They're getting, they keep eating. They're getting bigger. But we're on the ship one day and I get this email and the Reeds, they sent us some money for our mission. And I was like totally impressed with that. And then some of you met Francis, the missionary from Madagascar. He was here a few months ago. And it's just kind of weird. I don't know who this woman is. Her name is Jill something, and she lives in another state. That's not in Illinois, not in Indiana, I think. I don't know where she lives. And somehow she contacted me through Francis. And again, I don't know who she is. I don't know what she does. I talked to her once on the phone. Pastor Mike, can I send some money for Francis? I'm like, sure, you know, we're going to be sending some money. You know, you guys gave some money. A lot of people gave money. And like, it continues. And it's like, it's $50. I'll tell you straight up. It's 50 bucks. She sends it maybe every other month. And I'm like, I'm so encouraged by her faithfulness that she does this. And I know Francis is too, because I email him and he's like, wow, that's great, you know? And it's like, here's some woman. I don't know who she is. I don't know how all this works, but it works. So, but let's see what the Bible has to say. One of the stories from the Old Testament, Russ. This is from Exodus, I believe, Exodus 17. And if you remember, this is the Amalekites and the Israelites. Of course, I'm going to the Old Testament because, you know, that's where I'm from, the Old Testament. So, the Amalekites came and attacked the Israelites at Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, choose some of our men and go out to fight the Amalekites. Okay, yeah, you, and Joe, can you like get some guys and go fight those guys? And he says, tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with my staff, with the staff of God in my hands. God told him, take the staff, and you know what? If you hold the staff up, we'll be winning. So Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered. And Moses, Aaron, and this guy named Hur. Now this is tough. There's a guy named Hur. It's him, but it's Hur. Got it? We're working on that. I was very impressed with Sean because I says, do you know who held up Moses' arms? And she says, I believe it was Aaron and Hur. And I'm like, wow, you've got that. How many of you even heard of Hur in the Bible? No? I mean, he's in the Bible a number of times. His name is Hur. Hur. So they went to the top of the hill, and as long as Moses held up his hands, the Israelites were winning. But whenever he lowered his hands, the Amalekites were winning. So what do you think you need to do? Got to keep your arms up. And I was never in the military, but I think if you like go to Navy SEAL school and stuff, they do this thing where they have to hold like this log over their head or something, you know. You just try holding your arms up for 10 minutes. Let me tell you, you'll be struggling. No matter how big the cause is, you know, my army's going to get defeated if I lower my hands. It's just hard to do. Hold that stick up in the air. So when Moses' hands grew tired, they, Aaron and... okay, took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. So it's like, here, have a seat, Moses. Your arms are still up, technically, you know, but you're sitting. Aaron and Hur held his hands up on one side and one on the other so that his hands remained steady till sunset. So Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with the sword. But who's Hur? Who is this guy? Was that an important role? That battle would have taken a totally different turn, and things would have been turned out differently if that wouldn't have happened. So, I mean, a lot of people, I think, you know, how can I put it? Aaron is much more known, noteworthy, I would say, than Hur in the Bible. But Hur played a very, very important role. So this idea of, he kind of encouraged Moses. Actually, he helped him. He couldn't have done it without Hur, as well as Aaron. So another one that I was thinking about is, and this isn't on the screen, I don't think, the parable of the sower. This is from Luke. You know this story. After this, Jesus traveled from one town and village to another, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom of God. The 12, who were they? The 12 guys? They were with him. Okay. And also some women who had been cured of evil spirits and diseases. One of them was called Mary, Mary Magdalene, from whom seven demons have come out. Three, and then Jonah, the wife of Chuzza, the manager of Herod's household, Susanna, and many others. So a couple of them have names, but many others who are unnamed. They're not identified. These women were helping to support them out of their own means. They were encouraging them. It's like when the missionaries are on the field. These women were helping them to do that. Do they get any accolades? You know, like we've been going to a lot of movies, Academy Awards and all, you know, all that stuff that's been going on. And, you know, you see the movie and it's like, oh, yeah, those are the stars. And then you see all the, like, the things that come down, you know, and get smaller and smaller and smaller. And you're like, what's a gaffer? I don't even know what a gaffer is, but obviously you need one of those when you're making a movie. So, but a lot of people don't get any accolades for it. But my comment would be that he knows. He knows what you did or what you could have done or what you didn't do. He knows. And I'll say he's keeping track of it. I don't really think he is in a negative way, but he's aware of it. And then the last one, probably one of the most well-known stories in the Bible, the parable of the Good Samaritan. This is Jesus says to these guys, a man was going down the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. And this man, who doesn't have a name, is attacked by robbers. And they were really nice to him. They stripped him of his clothes. They beat him. And then they went away and they left him half dead, you know. So here's this guy laying on the side of the road. So a priest happens to be going down. Same road. He sees the man. What does he do? Let's cross to the other side because, you know, I don't want to see this guy because he's kind of messy and maybe it was Sabbath. I don't know. So he goes to the other side. Then a Levite, same thing. He decides to go the other side of the road. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him, he bandaged his wounds, he poured oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. Next day, he left the inn, he gave the innkeeper some money, and he says, look after this guy, and you know, I'm going to come back in a few days on my way back, and I will reimburse you for any additional expenses that you might have incurred for this guy. Total stranger. How does this work? Do we know, does the Good Samaritan have a name? Yeah, he's the Good Samaritan. You know, it could have been Joe, could have been Wayne, could have been anybody, but there's no name. But is he encouraged? Was that man, was he encouraged by this Samaritan? I think so. I don't think he ever forgot that. So I'm going to challenge you. It's like, how do you encourage? All kinds of different ways. Also, I want to. I think there's a difference between a cheerleader and an encourager. I think a cheerleader is just kind of out there and they're just rah, 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 sis, boom, bah, and everything's great. And it's okay to be a cheerleader. But I think an encourager is much more important. Now, I did ask this person if I could throw her under the bus. Donna, raise your hand, please. Everybody knows you. So, I don't know, you know, Donna's working on her doctorate in nursing. Obviously a very smart woman. She's working on this, been working on it. And could I discourage you a little bit? Could I help you out? You know, you're not going to make it. You know, you're doing pretty bad. And you'll never get there. And why would you do that? That's not going to help her a whole lot. Gee, Donna, you're pretty smart. You know, you're almost there. I know you have six more months or something, I think, something like that. You've made it this far. You can do it. You need to keep going, you know. Is it a struggle? Every day. But will you make it? Yes, thank you. So, you know, Susan encourages her, things like that. It's like, well, how do we encourage one another? I was thinking about, we were talking about addictions. Paul and I have some interesting conversations, let me tell you. Talking about heroin, it's like, let's see, because heroin in DuPage County is a real big problem. It's huge. People, you know, dying of it all the time. And I don't think anybody decided, you know what, I'm going to take heroin and I'm going to get addicted and I'm going to overdose and I'm going to die, you know. I don't think that's on their minds when they're doing that. Maybe it's like, you know, I'm unhappy. This isn't going well. This isn't going well. I hear heroin would help me, so maybe I'll take that. So if I told Donna, it's like, Donna, you know, you're having a hard time. Why don't you take some heroin? You know, I encourage you to take heroin. We laugh at that, but why would we do that? No, I encourage you, well, like, you know, get some help or maybe, you know, talk to your instructors. Whatever it might be, the idea is like to build your confidence. And again, it's not cheerleading. It's sort of like, okay, my marriage is going really bad. Oh, I encourage you to get a divorce. That'd be good, you know. Do you think God would like it? Yeah, I mean, there's sometimes I think divorce is necessary. But I wouldn't encourage somebody to get a divorce right out of the box. I would encourage them to get some help. Here's some suggestions. We're going to be talking in a couple weeks. We're going to be introducing Gary Chapman and the five love languages. And I think it's called The Marriage You Always Wanted. It's like, so if you're having help or if you're having problems with something, encourage people to get some help. So I understand the, let's see, who can I pick on? Mike Schrammick back there. Hi, Mike. Mike Schrammick, you know, I lost my job. I don't have any money. I'm going to lose my house. I think I'm going to rob a bank. I hear this Chase Bank over here, they don't have really good security. I'm like, that's a good plan, Mike. Why don't you do that? Because you probably won't get caught because the cameras don't work because we know that. No, we wouldn't encourage you to do that. Hey, well, you know, we've been offering Financial Peace University from Dave Ramsey. It's like, well, why don't you sign up for Financial Peace? Or maybe you don't like your job. Maybe you hate your boss. Maybe, and maybe rightfully so. I don't know. But would we encourage you to pray that your boss dies? No. Maybe encourage you to pray that you might change. Or encourage you to decide to go out and maybe get some more education or training so you can get a new job. How do we encourage each other? So I'll tell you, you know, I'll give you some. I nailed Paul a few weeks ago. And I mean, I felt bad about it because he was looking for encouragement. This is a true story. He's not here, so. He'll probably be listening online later, so for encouragement. But he was teaching at Christ Church of Oak Brook with his brother Rick. I think it was a six-week series for their seniors on Thursday mornings. And he calls me up on the phone. He's driving in, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I'm going to the Christ Church of Oak Brook. We're going to be doing this lesson and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, that's good, that's good. And at the time, I didn't realize it. Then he says, well, Heidi's with me. I'm like, well, that's good. I go, at least somebody will like what you have to say, you know. And over the cell phones, you could just hear like the wind come out of him because he was looking for some encouragement. It's like, yeah, Paul, you'll do fine, you know. You know the Bible. You'll do fine. Don't worry about it. I'm sure you've got a good message for him. I was being sarcastic, obviously. He didn't need sarcasm at that time. I can be pretty sarcastic a lot of times. Me? Show a one hand. No, okay. So, you know, a lot of times we're just making a joke. You know, we're making a joke about it. But sometimes those, remember sticks and stones? Break my arm, break my finger first. But before you call me like you're stupid or you can't do it, you know, it's like, The Reeds were sharing something with me about some plans they have for probably the more distant future. And I'm like, that sounds like a great idea, you know? We'll see what God has in store for you. Better than that stupid idea. I wouldn't do that. What are you, crazy? You know, I mean, that would take it right out of you. So we do that a lot. It's like, so how do we encourage each other? Oh, somebody else isn't here, so I can. She said she might come, but she's not here. A woman that I play racquetball with, and we've been playing racquetball together, I don't know, for a number of years. We stayed with her before we went to Mercy Ship. She opened up our house, or her house, to us, and she's pretty funny. But anyways, I know Paul plays basketball. You know, I'm Jewish. We don't play basketball, so. And I'm not tall, you know, like you guys, so I don't play basketball, but we play racquetball. Does anybody else play any, like, sort of sports like that, you know? And it's, well, let me tell you, and I've been playing probably for 20 years maybe in Elmhurst, a couple mornings a week, and when we first started playing, let me tell you, my language was, I'd show you Joe Wagner's text. He says, you know, do really good today, Mike, and don't swear. That was Joe Wagner's text message to me. But we used to be pretty raunchy. I mean, you know, it was all guys, and, you know, it was on a racquetball court, and it would get pretty nasty sometimes. Once in a while, it actually come to blows, but not anymore. So, and then a couple of women started playing with us, Christian women, so it got cleaned up real quick. I'm not sure how, but it was good. But you know what? You know what trash talk is? We still trash talk. It's like, it doesn't matter. You can be my partner, and I'll be just rooting you on, and then 2 minutes later, I'm playing against you, and you are scum. You can't hit the wall, you know? It's like, you miss the wall, and everybody's like, you know, get it up a little higher, because you've got to hit the wall first before it hits the floor, you know? It's like, oh, did you lose the strings in your racket? I mean, this just goes on over and over and over again. We just trash each other. But you know what? I think the cool thing is, whoever it is, when they make, like, somebody makes a really good shot, it's like, wow, that's really good. And, you know, you'll go over and you'll fist bump them, or you'll hit them with the racket and they hit you with their racket, something like that. But it's really good that we, you know, we trash talk, but we also encourage. So where you work, you know, is there somebody you can encourage there? Your neighbor, your friends, your spouse. What a concept that is. I'm watching Andy Griffith reruns now. Can tell I'm getting old. And there was this scene where Andy's like this couple, they keep having domestics back then, you know? And Andy gets him into the office and he's like, sit down. And it's like, you know, Joe, tell Myrtle that you really appreciate her cooking. I ain't gonna tell her that, her cooking's terrible. And it's like, Joe? And then it's like, so he does that, and then Myrtle, tell Joe that, you know, he's a nice guy. Ah, he's not a nice guy. And this goes, come back tomorrow, and Andy counseled them, and pretty soon it's like, start saying something encouraging to each other rather than discouraging to each other. Build each other up rather than tear each other down. So whether it's your spouse or children or family, clerks in stores. It's pretty interesting. I noticed these guys, we were out to eat last night, and I think you are very proud of them. I mean, how polite they were to the lady that was serving us, and, you know, and it's nice to see, and encouraging. I mean, it's like, wow, thank you very much. That was really good. I appreciate that. You know, I mean, if you're probably not the highest paid person in the world, it's nice to hear that. So think of somebody this week that you can encourage in some way. I don't know who it might be. Maybe it's a neighbor, maybe it's a friend, maybe it's your spouse. Maybe ask God who it might be, and ask God how you might encourage that person. The last slide, if you can get it up there, Russ. It's from 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Many of you know this. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just in fact you are doing. Encourage one another. And let me tell you this, encourage them in their faith. Anybody here struggle with their faith? Come on, raise your hands. You got to struggle. Sometimes I go, do you really believe all this stuff? I'm telling you, I do. It's like, I mean, this is a, I don't have the Bible in front, it's on my phone, but you hold up that book, I mean, that's a pretty far out story, you know? Do you really believe all this stuff? Do you ever doubt it sometimes? I do. Let me tell you, I know Paul does, because he shares with me sometimes. It's like, how does this all work? So sometimes you need to hear from Candy, and Candy will say, well, you know, I'll build you up, and why don't you pray? Why don't you, you know, try reading the Bible? Candy comes to me and says, I'm going to read the Bible every day, Candy. Oh, you'll never do that. Forget it. You know, it's like, and that's it. It's done, you know, rather than that's a great idea. And Susan, I didn't get to you yet, and I didn't ask you, but I think it's okay. So Susan, Finn, raise your hand. You got to raise your hand. Where's Mickey? Is he home? Okay, so Mickey's home. Mickey's been, you guys have been going on with this, with the cancer and stuff for a year at least. And this is kind of weird because I've been up to visit Mickey, and he's been in a lot of hospitals, I think, a lot of different places. You go to see Mickey, and I'm encouraged by him. I'm going to encourage him. This man's got these problems, and she can tell you all about it. You know, it's like, I don't even understand it all, but he's got all kinds of things going on, all kinds of treatments. He encourages me. I'm going to encourage him, and he encourages me. So it's kind of like cool how that works. If you go and encourage somebody, sometimes you might, you know, it's blessed to be a blessing, the same type of thing. So I'm very encouraged by that. And then also I've been to the hospitals with a number of people here and over the years, different places. And one of the things that I always like when I go to visit somebody in the hospital is like, well, what can I pray for you for? And then, you know, well, you know, they give you all the medical details. And okay, fine. So, like, if Susan would be there, or even if you're not there, let's pray for, you know, I'm going to pray for Susan, too, to encourage her, because she's going through this just as much as he is, and, you know, kind of a different way. But she has, you know, her emotional needs. I mean, she's battling a lot of stuff here. She needs to be encouraged as well. We all need encouragement. None of us needs discouragement. You know, if you want to get discouraged, come talk to me later, and I'll tear you down really good, you know. So I encourage you to be an encourager. So who can you encourage today as you go out? My prayer in the morning before I leave is, Lord, who are you going to pass in front of me today? Is it going to be like the kid at the drive-through window at McDonald's, or is it going to be somebody in the grocery store, or am I perfect? No. Do I slam people? Yes. But who can I encourage and how can I do it? It doesn't take much. It usually doesn't cost anything. It doesn't cost the $50 that this lady from some other state sends me. It doesn't cost any money whatsoever. It is totally free. And if you give it away, if you give that encouragement, I guarantee you that you will be encouraged by it. So, guys, girls, come on up. I'll tell Paul about that. That's good. He just likes it that I get applause and he doesn't. Maybe they were applauding you, I think. I don't know. So we're going to finish up with one last song with Sean and Steve and their boys. And I'll do a little benediction, and then you'll be dismissed to go out and encourage each other.